All right, welcome back to a super fantasy football podcast. I noticed in the last time that the T in fantasy doesn't really come out, so I'm trying to really enunciate super fantasy football podcast, a show dedicated to following the weekly grind of the Super Friends Fantasy Football League. No long introductions today because the man I have joining us has a lot on his plate dealing with you goons. That's right, I have Commissioner of the League, David Glancy. David, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for having me. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks for calling in. We really appreciate it. No, I know it's a lot of work dealing with us, but we appreciate you calling in. So
yeah, glad to be here.
So I ended with this last time. I didn't like how it sounded, so I'm going to try starting with it this time. So if you had to compare yourself as a fantasy owner to an NFL coach, team, GM, whatever, who would you be and why?
Yeah, so I thought it was an interesting question when you asked Randy and his comparison to the Rams, just in terms of the way he's operated his team and kind of the all or nothing mode over the last couple of years, and then seeing it pay off within a handful of weeks of each other was a really good example. And I know a few years ago, I tried to do a comparison of like each owner to an NFL team around the time Brian first joined. And at that point, I do remember comparing Randy to the now Washington football team because the moves he made were always so aggressive, like drafting a Justin Tucker earlier, like doing right. something off the cuff that the other teams wouldn't do or another GM wouldn't do. And like that, you know, Washington was always like randomly like a 7-9 team that sometimes made the playoffs, like Randy's teams, but then a lot of times were just not that great. But you know, I think the new comparison has been really cool to see progress. Going off that, I know the comparison I had originally made for myself was the Dallas Cowboys, which unfortunately I think that I would continue to make for my team for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the Cowboys or anything, but I if anything, I'd probably do a direct comparison for the purpose of this league to like a Jerry Jones for a couple of reasons. First off being my team's been irrelevant basically since the modern day Super Friends era. I think mm-hmm. I've won the last tournament, like the last championship of the old era, when we had a bunch of random guys in the league, like Andrew Renda and Colin Smith, and oh, wow. the league draft was set up where it wasn't a snake. It was just like 1 through 8 or however many teams we had. And then it went back to team one. And like that year I got the first pick. So and my team was loaded. Whoever had the last pick was it was a direct comparison basically on draft order. Right. And since then I, you know, had some hype around teams or like early expectations or high points scored, but have had really nothing to show for it, like a playoff appearance here or there, but like not really any wins or no championship appearances.
Yeah.
And then I guess like Jerry Jones is kind of like the guy that's been said to pull the strings on for the owners over Goodell. And I guess since I'm the league manager and kind of have like the ending absolute say here, it's a pretty fair comparison in that lens too.
Yeah. Love that. I think that's appropriate. With the Cowboys, they get so much hype, and being the commissioner, I think people are always kind of looking at you and looking at your team to try to figure out what's going on. And on paper, you know, it always looks good, but doesn't always pan yeah. out, unfortunately, as I know well.
And it's like the power rankings thing. If like that's the equivalent to the ESPN narrative of the real NFL, then. There's always the bias where you like look at your own team. You're like, man, like we're stacked. We're definitely going to be a playoff contender. And then you're like 4-7 and
right,
like, keeping Chris Godwin.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, this might be the year. Are you sticking with Pabst and Blue? There have been a number of team name changes. I can't quite keep up. Is that still your team name?
I came up with a pretty, I think, crafty logo. For maybe what could be a new era in my team, hopefully. But and I don't know if the ESPN servers just couldn't handle the incredible detail and artistry that went into the new logo I shared in our group chat. But It wouldn't let me upload it to the server,
Oh
so
no.
I'm trying to figure out if I can find a way to rebrand, but if not, I'm probably going to continue to go with the old Pabst run around.
Yeah, nice. All right. Well, let's get into it because there's been a lot going on since the last episode. We have the draft, and before the draft, we had a number of proposed league changes, some of which passed, some of which didn't. And I'd like to go through those in order now. So, first of all, an order which didn't pass, an increase in the keepers. So that vote did not pass. I don't think it got a single vote. But for all these, I want to know a little bit of your thought process behind it. So what were you thinking when you thought it might be good to increase from three keepers?
I think really for the keepers increase in mostly all of the proposals that we had talked through a couple of weeks ago were just a way of thinking of how we could refresh the league here going into the next few years. Previously, I think in like 2016 or so, we had the loner rules, and then we had some playoff of that, draft pick trading, and everything ensued with our custom boards and the discussions when you talk to people that aren't in our league, like how it's just a beast of its own.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think, there were a lot of changes in a couple year period, but not a lot of updates after that. And I was thinking, what could we do to refresh the league or keep it interesting or kind of keep the discussion, the excitement around it, over a longer period. And in terms of the keepers, like an increase or decrease or anything to it, I personally like the three. I always kind of find it interesting or like have more of the interest in certain players when they're on your team every year. And in a eight-person league where, there's not that many of us drafting, I think it's an interesting dynamic to have a little bit of turnover year to year where like Tom has Alvin Kamara from his rookie year through now, I mean previously, and he kind of has that guy where it's like, hey, that's my guy. If you want him, you have to work with Tom. Tom can kind of know he can build around the young running back over the next couple of years. I think it's pretty neat. I think it kind of creates more of a longevity approach and like looking through your teams. And the more years we get into it all, it does seem like each of the owners has their own way of running or approaching how they build out their roster, which is pretty neat. So, in terms of increasing keepers from three, I was trying to figure a way to, shake up the keeper rule in general. I thought for the purpose of the discussion, we could talk about a change in the number. You could segue that into a couple spin-offs into, changing the requirements. Like if you're going to keep three players, one has to be a certain position, or like you can only keep three players that all play a different position or something of the other, where some person couldn't stockpile three running backs or three receivers or anything like that. Or, if one keeper had to say be a quarterback, it could kind of be like your franchise quarterback equivalent of the league where Randy has Josh Allen for the next 10 years or something. And if you really want him, you have to, do a Saquon Barkley S trade or something along the lines to get that. So just the thought there was just how can we make the team building aspect of the league more interesting or just consider shaking it up to what we've currently had.
Right. Yeah, I get that. And we probably should have, in our own self-interest, voted for that so that Brian doesn't have 15 running backs, but we didn't. So sticking with three. All right, let's move on to the third proposal, increasing the pot size. Love this idea. We're going from 25 to 50, and we got some additional incentives. Are those incentives, were those like voted on and finalized, or were those just kind of still proposals?
I think that everybody had agreed that the incentives that we discussed worked, just kind of like vocally going through and approving. The points were the pot would increase, so from a total of 200, $1,000 and being paid out to $400, which would mean instead of every owner pitching 25 at the beginning of the year, they would pitch 50. The overall league winner, the proposal was, would get 50% of the pot right off the bat, so a total of 200. And then the remaining 200 would be split across a couple of different ways. And I think we could still keep it open to discussion for the next couple of weeks if we wanted to. But what we had discussed was 100 of the remaining two would go to the team with the best regular season record. So whoever would be the one seed would get $100. And then the, so in theory, you know, maybe you're the one seed, you lose the first round of the playoffs or you lose in the championship game. You'd still get $100. You still had a good team. You know, it just could be like the shakeout of the playoffs. And it kind of incentivizes every team to win the regular season over the course, not just to make a very big push or a big transaction at the end and skirt the line and win the whole pot. And then the other thought was adding or spreading 100 of the total 400 out to the team that had the most total points scored during the course of the regular season, which I thought is kind of interesting because in some years we've had a team that had the best overall record, but there's been like a team that's not made the playoffs and they've led the league in points, or there's been the four seed that's led the league in points. So I think it's would be interesting just to kind of see how that plays out. And you would think in reality that if you win the championship, generally you would think you would be the one seed, and if you're the one seed, you would think you would have the most total points scored. So there's definitely an opportunity, and I feel like during the Brian three-peat era of you winning all three of the categories, but I think that you could have years or situations where one person wins 200, another person wins 200 from the two separate spin-offs, or you know, it's spread across three different people. So.
I like those updates a lot. I think I pitched this at the draft also, but Keegan runs a league that has it's an insane league. It's way different from ours, but I think
Like most, yeah.
yeah. Well, his is it's like a dynasty. Everyone has to pay. I think it's $100. Which for a dynasty could be a lot if you're in a downswing and just getting your ass kicked every year. But the way they get people to come back is each week, I think it's the highest scoring team gets like a little bit of money back. I don't know that we'd be able to do that with our current pot size, because I also like the distributions that you have for the top record and the highest scoring team, but just something to think about going forward. I think that could be interesting.
Yeah, I think the more that you increase the pot size, the more you can do with payouts. And it is kind of fun. I was in a work league for a couple of years where they did have similar payouts, depending on what place you finish or how many points you scored in a week or like who was in first after X amount of weeks. But so Nate Ferry that I worked with was in a fantasy league with another guy and they like co-owned a team. And the reason being that the pay per team was like $500 per team, and they had all kinds of things where like the highest scoring player per week would get like $50, the highest scoring like team would get $50, but it was like the total pot was like 5 grand or something. Like
God
it was
damn.
insane. And I was like, I mean, I don't want to like put you know take a second mortgage out of my home to participate in fantasy, right? Like it's fun enough, but you know, if you even if you do have a bad down year, you don't think your team's going to be great, you know, like worst cases, you're out $50, and then maybe you're in a scenario where you could still win something.
Yeah, absolutely. Love it. Looking forward to that one. So next we have the roster change distribution, number four. Is this one going into effect next season? I wasn't quite sure on that.
Yeah, this would be a next season, so 2023 league
Okay.
change. And what we ended up doing was just adding an additional position into every team's starting lineup. And I think that makes sense given that there's only eight teams. It's better to see more players starting. It creates that player range from like your starting spot 8 to 10 more interesting. And it it allows you to kind of like create your team more in the way that you want to build it out. So the final change, which will be in effect for next year, is adding a additional flex spot. So every team would have two flexes. Some of the things that we talked about were getting rid of the tight end position altogether and making that a flex, which could be anything from running back, receiver, or tight end, making just one running back, since a lot of teams don't use multiple running backs, or a lot of running backs don't really score as many points. Just kind of thinking what made more sense in terms of spreading it out to where the points would actually be scored in fantasy football. But the final solution was the additional spot, which could be any flex position.
Right. Awesome. Looking forward to that one too. I think it makes a lot of sense, especially because, like you said, we're only an 8-team league. And so that means there's a lot of talent out there. It's kind of what makes our league so difficult, especially when preparing for the draft. You get experts saying this guy is like a late fifth round pick. And okay, for our league, that means he's like an early seventh round pick or something like that. So I think that's going to be a good change, add a little depth to the teams. Looking forward to that one.
And it kind of goes into the next point that we voted on in terms of changing, which was readjusting the point allocation. And the thought there was being, how could we just get more points or a better amount of points changed? And I know that what we ended up was increasing the quarter point per catch to a half point per catch,
Let's
which I think is
go.
fine. I feel like the whole point's still just a lot for a catch, honestly.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I'm open to, just even going forward in terms of like changing other point allocations. I think like the 10 yards receiving and running is pretty easy, but like looking maybe at like the quarterback position or like other types of points that you could add for different positions would be interesting. And even going off like the last point where like draft experts say someone's really good. I mean, there's a guy like Christian Kirk. I'm looking at the player board, was one of the highest rated players not taken, and he's 73rd overall in like a 12 team league. In theory, that would be like a fourth round pick, right?
Right.
So it's pretty crazy that guys that would almost be, could potentially be like a first position player at their position aren't even taken and are free agent going into the start of our season.
Yeah, I'm excited about the 0.25 increase to 0.5. Makes our league a little bit more similar to others. I did want to talk about my proposal for defensive scoring changes, because I think I brought this up at the draft, but I don't know, the defensive scoring, I think, I don't know if this is ESPN or just our particular league, but it just seems outdated. So I went into it. If your defense allows 0 points, which in today's NFL is a hell of a feat. If they allow 0 points, you get 5 points. And then 1 through 6, 4, 7 through 13 points, 3 points. If you're an NFL defense and you hold your opponent under 13 points, that in and of itself, you had an incredible week. That's only 3 points. So my thought process, and even like, okay, so if you allow 28 points, that's -1. I don't know. It just seems a little bit off to me. So my thought was increase 0 points allowed to 7 points, and then keep the same like distribution totals. So, but then just decrease 1 point each time. So 0 points, 7 points given to the team, 1 through 6 points allowed, six points for your fantasy team, 7 through 13, 5 points, and so on. I don't know. I'm just personally sick of my defense getting negative points, even when it seems like they have a decent week. But that's just me.
Yeah, it's like the defense scoring in general is interesting, right? Like you could have 0 points allowed, that's 5 points. if you have two interceptions, those are 2 points each, right? So, I feel like it's way more impressive to see a defense hold a team scoreless than it is to see a quarterback throw two interceptions in a game. I feel like in terms of like the point distributions for the scoring allowed, you could even increase that more so. And some of the negative totals for points allowed, I think you could even potentially decrease. The biggest thing in terms of changing the defensive scoring would probably, and I think it would be helpful to change the scoring so that defenses are seen more as an actual value position than a position that is added and dropped week over week, depending on like who's playing the Jets.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I think it'd be interesting. I think we'd have to like go in kind of by category and discuss what makes sense, and then from there look at how that would change the value of the position. And from there, I think every owner would have to look at where they value the position and what team specifically they value based off those point scorings.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'll go in and I'll make a detailed proposal that I'll send to you, and it's fine if we don't enact it this year, but I would love to stop having the dilemma of I'm having a close week, should I start my defense or not?
I mean, that's an interesting dilemma. That's
It
the one thing
is.
that's like kind of interesting. Like, all right, like I'm probably locked for a win. I'm just not going to play a defense, which is kind of cool. I think there's somewhat interesting to see the punitive part of it, but yeah, I think the scoring metrics for the defense makes the position pretty insignificant. Or you have a team where like 1 week they have like two picks returned for a touchdown, and they score like 30 points defensively. You're like, okay, like that. Now all of a sudden defenses matter for one team, one game. It's a bit ridiculous.
Right. Next up, we have the loan registration rules, number 7. This one did pass, and I think this could be renamed the Saving Randy from Himself rule change, so that he can't just get an insane amount of loaners.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of worked for Randy last year, where he
It
brought
did,
in a
yeah.
bunch of loaners. And I know it's kind of, it has a trickle down effect where if teams can't bring in that many players, then other teams that aren't doing well can't let go of that many players, which is I think the one downside. I think it's interesting to have the opportunity for teams that are just out of it to look forward. But I think we got to a point where it looked like, hey, you're a team that's probably going to make the playoffs a week before the trade deadline. You add the best tight end and like two top five position players in their respective roles.
Right.
And, that doesn't really make sense, or it entirely changes the dynamic of the league with just one move. So I thought it'd be beneficial. And I think going forward too, if you can't make that many loan moves, if maybe you do want to go all in and you think like Najee Harris is going to win you the league this year, and you give up a first and a second next year, if you can only do one of those, you're not going to give up or have the opportunity to mortgage your future just for one loan player 1 year. So I do like the aspect of that, and we do have the rule, so it's going to go into effect this year where teams can only bring in one lonely type player per year.
Yeah, I like that. And we'll skip ahead a little bit. The updating the trade deadline, I think that works really well with that. So it is more of a gamble. You have to kind of give up earlier if you think you're not going to make it and you want to loan out your top guy. Did we land on an exact date on when the trade deadline is going to
Yeah,
be?
we did. We did the 26th, and I just locked that in right before we started our discussion here.
Nice.
So I forget what week that is in the NFL. I think it's week 8. So it's about halfway through the year, maybe like in terms of our league, when you do 2 weeks per round of the playoffs, plus the week 18 being waived in terms of fantasy. So it's like right after the halfway point of the regular season for the fantasy league. But it moves it up from November 24th, or like an entire month earlier. So I think it creates a new dynamic, and especially too, if we do have the payouts where the highest scoring team can make the playoffs or make some money back in, like say you're a team like I think I'm not sure if it was Tom or Brian last year that they were near the highest point scoring teams in the league and they gave up players and you would say, well, maybe I might not make the playoffs, I might finish fifth, but if I keep these guys, I win $100 still.
Right.
I think that kind of plays hand in hand with some of the other changes.
Yeah, love it. And then we'll go back to proposal number eight, future pick trading. Did this one end up passing?
It did not. It got four yes votes, three no votes, and one abstained. So, it's like trying to regulate the free market. You can't stop it. If Randy wants to jeopardize his team and trade into 2027, he can go for it. I don't have a problem with that. I was kind of thinking that it was insane that we were still trading off picks for a guy that it's been moved between teams multiple times and hasn't done anything in his NFL career. And even in that time period, Randy still won a championship. It's pretty wild, but especially there are some leagues like the NBA that you can't trade more than like 2 years in advance. So that's kind of where the idea came from. But ultimately, and I do think at the end of the day, kind of to comes to the choice of the owner. If they want to do it, they can do it. If they don't want to do it, they don't have to do it. And I think a few of us, like myself, Brian, Eric, had voted that they should put in some kind of cap. But those owners, I'm not sure, have ever traded future picks or the types of owners that are going to trade multiple years of future picks. So, it kind of ends up on each team's preference at the end of the day.
Yeah, that one I just kept going back and forth and I just could not decide. So I said, you know what? I'm abstained as an option. That's what I'm gonna do for this one. So glad I did it. Because I didn't want to be the deciding vote on that one. I just couldn't decide.
It would have been the swing vote too, because it would have been the fifth yes. So, at the end of the day, I don't think it impacts very many people, but could potentially have one big impact if it did. So, I'm fine with keeping that how it is.
Was there any other change that you thought of that you dismissed before even bringing it in front of the owners? You just didn't think we'd go for it?
I don't think that there were any change. I was trying to throw everything out there. Like one of the votes or one of the points being the change in the draft style. It's like, this is crazy, but maybe people are interested in it. So I threw it out there and pretty much everything that came into my mind, I put on the list to talk about. I think some of the ones that I thought would be interesting that didn't end up passing were like removing the locked in tight end position or changing the number of positions at certain roles, but there was nothing really off limits for the point of the discussion that we had a couple weeks ago.
I like it. Well, I think you did a great job not only bringing those proposed changes to the table, but the way you laid it out and everything, I thought it was awesome. So definitely appreciate having you as our commissioner. It's not an easy job. And so with that, what's the hardest part of being our commissioner that other people wouldn't realize, other than Randy crying collusion every time you send out a message?
Yeah, I that is true. I don't think I think nowadays the league's pretty self-sufficient, where before the hardest part of being a commissioner was like balancing the output of the league from all of the respective owners. Like I know when Austin was in the league, he wouldn't check his team or he wouldn't update his team. So people would text him like, "Hey, update your team this week. I need you to win." And it's hard to have people like I know Eric and Randy in particular, like waiver wire people. They're like super into it. They're always on the board and looking around how they can improve their team. And then having other people that like aren't as interested or aren't as mad about fantasy football. So balancing that level of interest between the owners was difficult in more of the early stages. And I think that right now we have a pretty good level of interest amongst the eight of us. And one of the things I even did think about was what would it look like if we increased the number to, like, say, 10, and just thinking in terms of how it's run, how easy it is to run, and then, you know, who would those two people be? What would it mean for everybody else? That where we're, I thought where we were at was a pretty good spot. But the, you know, the other, like, more time consuming activities are the ones that are, like, really just for fun type things at this point, like the power rankings or the draft boards or putting together the documents like this to go the extra step to make the league interesting. It's like you want to do it every week or you want to do it more often, but, like, they can be, like, more time consuming hour long tasks. And it's, oh, like, all right, sure, it's a Tuesday night. Like, I am more interested in watching Indian Matchmaking and Drive to Survive on Netflix than I am on putting together, like, a 10 pager for us to vote on.
Right. Yeah. The power rankings, that's a lot of work. I don't know how you did that so consistently for so long, but they were definitely fun to read.
Different jobs in different stages of her career.
Yeah.
it was easier to do it in the beginning than it has become in the more recent years.
So we need to get you, like, another couple promotions so you can get back to slacking off at work and you can focus more on our fantasy football, yeah, league.
Yeah. Or just give it up and have Allison be the sole provider for the family so I can do that full time.
Oh my God. That is the dream right there. That would be amazing.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So, and back to Randy constantly crying collusion. Do you think there's ever actually been, like, collusion in our league? I'm not even sure, like, how that would be defined, but I thought that'd be an interesting question to ask. Like, what's some shady shit you think that's gone on?
Well, I feel like in terms of, like, for actual collusion, you'd have to have, like, multiple people colluding. And I feel like for something to actually go through, in most cases, it would be, like, require, like, me to be involved to, like, get that final approval part.
Right.
Like, I feel in terms of, like, some of the shadiest stuff over the course of the years, I think, and I'm not sure if it was, like, the prior league page era, where, like, I know there were a lot of instances where it was either you or Ramsey or other years it would alternate where, like, all of a sudden Aaron Rodgers and, like, some other good players was being flipped over to the team from the bad team to the team that was contending, yeah, for nothing. You're like, oh, like, that seems like a weird move.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel like they're, you know, pre vote draft pick or pre trade voting and approvals to go through. You could kind of do anything, so that was shadier.
Yeah.
I know that there was the time where, I forget who, Chez was trading, but he had accepted multiple offers from different teams and different timestamps, and then had tried to go back to get the one deal that was the second one he actually approved to go through because, yeah, he thought it was better. I think that was the scenario, and that was when we did the whole investigation look in with the timestamps of the texts and everything. Like, that was wild. And I think, like, we had the write up with, like, the screenshots and the texts and everybody had, like, submitted them over. Like, we got more action on that than with the Tom Brady phone smashing thing around the exact same time.
Yeah.
I guess, like, the closest thing, like, to actual, like, collusion would have been if, like, say Matt didn't submit his keepers and, like, I told him, hey, Matt, you know, I'll let you keep your keepers, but, like, you can pick three, but don't pick Cooper Kupp, or, like, you can pick three, but you have to, like, trade me something. And he said, sure. And, like, went through with it. Like, I feel like that would be,
right,
you know, like, your more textbook thing, but we haven't had any of that so far. And yeah, I'm sure if anything remotely close to that happened, we would hear about it.
Well, that's unfortunate. We need more shady shit going on in our league. I'm gonna try to start stirring the pot so I can have things to talk about every week on this goddamn show.
You can go for it. Keep it interesting. Yeah, you have to fill out the whole podcast week over week. So
yeah. So you had the first overall pick in the draft this year, and I know you were listening and throwing out some trade proposals. What kind of interest did you get in that first overall pick?
I, you know, The actual interest that I got from other teams in the first overall pick wasn't as high as I ideally hoped it would be, and I think to an extent it was going to be hard to get a move done. I think the most push that I had in moving the first overall pick was like a back and forth that I had between Eric, but ultimately I didn't really like the keepers that I had going into the year. Like, I
Right.
don't really highly rate Zeke. I'm not even sure he'll be running back one in Dallas by the end of the year. I like Godwin, but he's not an amazing keeper by any stretch of the imagination. And I like Aaron Jones, but I was thinking, ideally, how could I would be fine moving a package of Zeke and Godwin for some other team's keeper and only going in with two keepers that I really like. Then one keeper that I really like and two guys that don't really mean that much to me. So ultimately, I reached out to every team but Randy because he had nothing left to trade. His keepers like weren't that enticing. And actually, no, I did reach out to Randy. I tried to see if I could put something out there for Josh Allen just straight up.
Oh,
No, the only
interesting.
person I didn't reach out to was Didiano because he didn't have any keepers.
Right.
And he wasn't going to trade like the third overall pick for either Zeke or Godwin straight up, or probably a combination of both of them. And I wasn't going to move my first round one or do like any like trade packages with him. So, nothing made sense to me there. I think in terms of moving the first pick, like I knew that I was going to take Cooper Kupp because he was like the second highest scoring non-quarterback last year and like the fourth highest scoring player in the league last year, which was pretty wild for a receiver. And I figured, outside of Jonathan Taylor, not a lot of guys even really make sense to go after if I know I could have a Cooper Kupp on my team.
Right.
So, the most intriguing trade was trying to get like a Jonathan Taylor from Eric. I tried to trade initially the two keepers for Taylor straight up, which was never going to go through. Then I was like, well, how could I get him? And I thought if I could offer the first round pick and then one of the keepers for Taylor, that could go through. But I didn't want to lose a keeper and a really good player that's not far off Taylor. So I
Right.
said that I would want Eric's first round pick as well. Like a pick swap. So he would get one, I would get like six or seven, and then he would get an extra player. And he said no, and then I tried to do the two players and the pick swap, and ultimately he wanted to keep Taylor because he's a good dual-purpose young player to build around for the foreseeable future. But I think that was the most actual discussion that I had amongst any team for any potential trades, which was interesting and fun for a while. But we got to a point where no one was going to be able to make a move that would make them happy.
Yeah, there were some pretty high value players on the board early on this year, so I think that made it probably a little more challenging to get a deal off because it would be a bit more of a blockbuster if you were going to make a trade.
Yeah, and say that there wasn't a Cooper Kupp out there on the board. I think he was the fourth highest ranked player, and say Matt had kept his keepers, and the highest ranked player was like a Debo Samuel. Maybe I would have done two keepers and a first round pick straight up for a guy like a Jonathan Taylor, and maybe an additional pick, but I think if you have a player you really, really like and you don't have players that are being offered that you like almost equally, then no one's really going to be able to get themselves comfortable on that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's start going through the draft a little bit. So, as I understand it, you're going to put out a more in-depth team by team breakdown of the draft. Is that still true?
Yeah, I think ultimately, before the season starts, my plan is to do a preseason power rankings in order and then kind of touch on why. So a pick I liked, a pick I didn't like, a potential sleeper by team. So a little tease. But yeah, I'm good to go in team by team and give a little, I guess this would be a little tease for that discuss
Absolutely.
or that write up.
Hell yeah. Awesome. Let's do it. So, yeah, just give us one little tidbit from each team. Let's start with Eric Altman for Power and Vitality.
Yeah, so if I'm looking at Eric's draft, a pick that I did like, I'll tell you a pick I liked that I thought could be really high value is 11th round. I'm looking, he took rookie receiver Sky Moore in Kansas City. Tyreek Hill's gone. They don't have a true number one. I think Kelsey's still there, but he's older. We've seen regression in his numbers. If Sky Moore is a could be not quite Tyreek Hill, but an equivalent at that late, I think that's a pretty exciting pick. I like Terry McLaurin. I think that round three is pretty good. He's one of the best receivers available, and he's been a pretty high scoring receiver and went from, I don't know, some guy named Bob in Washington to, Carson Wentz isn't amazing, but pretty good quarterback to get him yardage and scores. So I think he could be, a guy like a Stephon Diggs that had a breakout all of a sudden, now is a high ranked player for the position.
Yeah. Awesome. And next we'll go to Matthew Chess, the rebrand to the technical fouls. What do you think about his draft?
Matthew Chess. So he had a couple running backs and a receiver going to the draft. So yeah, he could pretty much go in any direction. I think that I'll tell you the pick that I could like a lot was Kareem Hunt in the 7th round. Right now with Cleveland, they've been a team that's been more rush heavy in the past. Now with the long suspension, that's basically the entire fantasy term. Hunt's been a pretty good double-digit type scoring running back as a number 2 guy, and he was looking to get out of Cleveland earlier. So, you could potentially, worst case scenario, be the player we've seen him the past couple of years. Best case scenario, be a high-end running back keeper type player at the position to get in the 7th round, which I liked a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Real quickly, what do you think of James Conner's fantasy chances this year? Because he went on a fucking tear last year, but like an insane amount of touchdowns that I don't know is he anyone could keep up with. Where do you see him
Yeah.
going forward?
I feel like he'll regress because I think he had like 18 regular season touchdowns or something last
Yeah,
year,
something
which
crazy.
is at least one a game. And I don't even think he started off that hot in the first couple of weeks. I would say that I don't think Arizona has a lot of other running backs behind him, and their team that scores a decent amount of points, and when they get in the red zone, they're not going to be able to use all of their threats all the time. They're going to have to run the ball or like get it out
Yeah.
wide to a running back. So I think he'll still be a pretty valuable player. I can't imagine he'll be as good as he was last year, but I think he's honestly, if I'm looking, I think Saquon's more inconsistent and Devonta Smith is contingent on Jalen Hurts having a good year. So I'd probably rank James Conner as his top keeper going into the year.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. All right, let's move on to Didiano, who's had a very important draft because he did not set his keepers. What can you tell us about his 2022 draft?
I feel like Didiano had the best high early round part of draft out of every team because, he pretty much needed, obviously every position, but I think he got a pretty good balance of players, and I think he got some really good higher end players for where he was up. And having the 3rd overall pick and then an additional 1st round pick from Randy, definitely helps. I'd say his best pick, and it's like hard to say it's someone's best pick is their first pick because it's a lot easier to pick good players. But like Nick Chubb at 3, I thought was really good for some of the reasons from Kareem Hunt. The Browns have a good line. They've been a run heavy team. I think his value's gone up with the Watson suspension.
Yeah, for sure.
He's a really good running back. He scores. He gets a lot of yards. The team's probably going to be built around him, and I think that the Browns are still going to be pretty competitive. So I think he could be like a top 5 running back, which is very valuable and would be a great keeper still for a while. Debo Samuel is really good just based off how much San Francisco relies on him. Lamar Jackson, if he stays healthy, can single-handedly win you games week over week. And a quarterback's pretty high, but in the third round, but like that's his fourth pick, and he gets like a game changer type player for the position. So I think off the early rounds, he did really well in putting a pretty solid foundation in his team in place.
Good stuff. All right, I'm up next. How did the Iron City Olifants do? I think this is the most I've ever prepared for a draft, and I don't know that I picked a single player that I had my eyes on going into it. I think I just like blacked out and kind of went with whoever was up next on the rankings. But what can you tell me about my draft picks?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking off the board. Like, you had some good keepers going in. You had Tyreek Hill, who his value's probably, I mean, his value's decreased since he's not with Kansas City. He's much more of an unknown entity at this point, but he's still a good player. Eckler was great last year. I'm not sure if he produces at the same scoring output that he had for fantasy, but he's still very good, and I think you can't really beat Mahomes. I mean, DeAndre Swift, first round, you want to draft a running back. I think that there weren't that many available at that point, and he, before injuries, was doing very well. And I'm always kind of nervous going Lions running back. Just on paper, it doesn't sound great. And then,
Seriously,
you know,
totally not.
depending on how Alvin Kamara or when he plays or what's going on there, could be a good pick or could be tougher in the second round. But I like some of the other picks, though, especially with Bruce. Like, I like Mike Williams is pretty good. Chargers throw a lot. Pitts is the best player that the Falcons have offensively. Like, I really like DK Metcalf. I thought I heard that the Fal or the Seahawks wanted to use him like the Niners use Debo Samuel. Maybe he gets a couple rushing touchdowns. Maybe they use him in different ways that his fantasy output increases this year. Because, I mean, last year Russell was injured the most part of the season, and the Seahawks had a down year. So, you know, in theory, they can't really be much worse, even if they do play Geno Smith again, like they did last year. And if he's used more, then I think he could be, you know, potentially a really good player in the fifth round.
Well, here's
So.
hoping. I hope that pans out. And all right, let's move on to another team that also rebranded. Brian Flaherty, the Running Fools. Love that name.
Yeah, I mean, definitely appropriate considering he had three running backs being kept. You would think he would almost go receiver, 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 but he went running back. So it was with his first pick with Joe Mixon, which, I mean, personally, I feel like unless if he was planning on doing some kind of trade, didn't necessarily need considering that there were some really good receivers available at that spot. I guess the player looking at Brian's team that I do really like is the, well, I think he had two pretty good picks in at 47 and then 50. He got Darren Waller late, which I think will be a good player because I think the Raiders are going to rely on Carr more, which is evidenced via the big contract he signed and what McDaniel might want to do with him as the new coach. But then Alan Lazard in round seven, pick 50 is pretty interesting. He's the most, I guess, outside Randall Cobb, experienced returning player at the receiver position for Green Bay that would have the longest relationship with Rodgers. And he's a pretty good player. I wouldn't expect him to be Davante Adams, but he could be, you know, a pretty good value pick at 50. I mean, Brian could have had Davante Adams at two, so.
I've had my eye, or I had my eye on Alan Lazard, going into it, and I thought he was going to be like my sneaker, like no, who the hell has heard of Alan Lazard? But that's just me, that who knows nothing at all about football. So I hear a name like that, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be perfect. But unfortunately, Brian has also heard of Alan Lazard. So,
Yeah, I mean, Brian's team is always good. And I feel like every time you look at Brian's team, you're like, a lot of times he's the guy, and you're like, how did nobody else pick that player at this point? Like, that's always kind of what I think about. And then, I mean, another, like, I'm looking even Tony Pollard, 10th round, 79. I talked about how I'm not sure Zeke's the first running back in Dallas by the end of the year. It could be because Tony Pollard is, and that would be Brian's sixth running back, you know? So.
Yeah. Jeez, yeah, he's got an insane number of running backs. The running
Yeah.
fools, aptly named. All right, let's move on to the commissioner himself, Bolden Pabst. What's the highlight from your draft this year?
Yeah. So, I mean, just because I know exactly what my strategy was, I knew that I liked Aaron Jones and I was going to get Kupp. So I felt like I had a pretty good top end player at the two of those positions. So from there, it was kind of filling things out. And with the reliance on running backs, I wanted to get some better, younger guys. So I kind of rolled the dice on J.K. Dobbins. I liked him just because Baltimore likes to run the ball. He's looked incredible when he's been healthy. It's just, can he be healthy? And he's supposed to be by the beginning of the season. So I think that could be one of those guys that you're like, oh, I think he was ranked way lower than when I drafted him, but I reached there. I guess one of the other picks, just like looking through the team that I thought could pan out nicely, looking back, and I'm sure now that I'm saying out loud, it's going to be laughed at, would be Chris Olave in the ninth round at 65. Because, I mean, the Saints drafted a receiver in the first round. You would expect him to be a primary guy in the offense. You don't know what Michael Thomas is going to look like long term. Winston, you know, had put up crazy fantasy numbers for his receivers in the past in Tampa, and I know that that's not the exact same in New Orleans now, but you know, he could be a pretty good fringe starting receiver at a later round pick.
Yeah, for sure. All right, and then moving on to the Denny Irvine's Gatorades, Tom Haley, tell us about his draft.
So the thing that I was going to say about Tom's draft wasn't necessarily about the players that he drafted, because he had two receivers and a tight end, and then went three receivers straight before touching any other position, which meant he had five receivers and a tight end before going anywhere else. It was more the fact that he might have had the best players to keep from out of any team last year. And I like the pick to keep Justin Jefferson. I like the pick to keep Ja'Marr Chase, especially these young guys to build around. The Travis Kelce pick makes absolutely zero sense to me, because I'll tell you the guys that Tom could have kept instead of Travis Kelce. Alvin Kamara, which would have given him an early running back, which he wouldn't have needed. Kamara was ranked as, let me show you, the 10th best player on the board going into the year,
Oh,
like
wow.
this third highest undrafted player. Joe Mixon, who was the highest ranked running back on the board going into the draft and was the ninth highest ranked overall player. He could have had him if he wanted, and if he wanted another really good receiving option, he could have kept either Stephon Diggs or Debo Samuel. So Tom had, and that, so Diggs and Samuel were ranked 11th and 12th in the player board. He had guys ranked 9, 10, 11, and 12 all on his
Oh
team,
my
in
God.
addition to Chase at 5 and Justin Jefferson at 8. He had 5 of the top 12 players on his team, and instead he kept Travis Kelce, who was ranked 27th and has been regressing.
Yeah. Man, I did not I knew his team was stacked last year, but did not understand how stacked. But I'll give Tom a little bit of leeway here because if you can have a top scoring tight end like Travis Kelce, I can't imagine how nice that is because I've never had like the tight end. Every year there's one guy who's just like the guy 10 times better than everyone else. I gotta imagine that's tough to give up, but man, that list of names he had, I didn't realize he had that many options to choose from.
Yeah,
That's crazy.
it's pretty wild there, all the players that he had.
Yeah, we'll see how it pans out. And then finally, Randall Myers, the defending champs, the real American. Once he could finally start picking players in the fifth round, how'd he do?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, really, because he had a quarterback. He had it in Josh Allen, which I think is a good player. I think he's a guy that, even though a lot of teams don't keep quarterbacks, could be a guy that you could still keep a few years in advance. Mike Evans, I think, a decent player to return. George Kittle is pretty underwhelming, especially considering that he's like a tight end keeper. So you have no running backs, and you only have one receiver as a keeper, which, but those are the kind of the two most valued positions, I think, in terms of keepers. And out of the two positions, you only had one of them going into the fifth round. So you're kind of scrambling there. I know he got a lot of slack for drafting Christian Watson for some rando at Sunderland in the seventh round. And I understand the thought to draft a rookie receiver from the Packers, and maybe he hopes up he turns out well. I think he got some slack from Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and it is his first overall pick, but like he didn't have a running back, and he's their top ranked running back in their team that scores a lot. So like I don't think that that's a horrible pick, honestly. I thought if you looked at who was available at the time, I thought he did pretty good. I mean, the pick that I like, and it might be more of a 2023 pick that I like than a 2022, depending on how the year shapes out for Randy. But like, I mean, DeAndre Hopkins at nine, he's going to miss half the fantasy league, but if he comes back and he's still a top, right, a top five receiver, top 10 receiver in fantasy, at least he's a good player that Randy could have either to return and make a late push somehow, or to return alongside like Josh Allen or Mike Evans next year, which would at least put him with more picks in a much better state to go forward.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That'll be interesting to watch. All right. Well, that's
Actually, wait.
oh, yeah,
I
go
will
ahead.
say, you know what? I'm looking at Randy's board. The last pick he drafted, I think, 15th running back Kenyon Drake, second running back two in Las Vegas for the Raiders. I think the Raiders were talking about looking at trading Josh Jacobs, and if that would make Drake effectively their starting running back, and Randy drafted him like as the last overall player in a team that they could use him in a number of positions, like could actually be an incredible pick.
Yeah,
Like in theory.
that one could pan out because yeah, people have been down on Josh Jacobs this year, and I'm not sure why because I had him on my team last year and he was solid. Like, he wasn't out of this world, but RB2 or flex, he put up numbers for me. But yeah, if he gets traded for sure, Kenyon Drake could that could be a huge pick for Randy.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah.
We can look back on the board and this episode and really have a lot of fun with it
Oh
in
yeah,
hindsight.
definitely. For sure. All right, well that's everyone, and I won't take up any more of your time. So Kamish, thanks for joining us. I know you're super busy. But best of luck this season.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. Good luck to you. Looking forward to another exciting year in the Super Friends Fantasy Football League.
Absolutely. All right, I'll see you, Dave.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye. And that was the Kamish. Can't believe we got him on the pod. Big shout out to Commissioner David for coming on. I know he's got a crazy busy schedule, keeping all you goons in line. So it was really cool of him to hop on for a bit. We're going to be off for another couple of weeks while there's not much going on. But before the season, we will put out another episode. Go ahead and start setting those lineups. We will be going through all the matchups and making projections and getting into the actual season. So looking forward to it. Best of luck to everyone this year, and we'll be back before the season starts.